Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon on this absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous New York evening. Seth and Sean. Sean will be calling in momentarily. Seth is sitting outside his office window looking at the 70-degree weather saying, heck, I walked through Central Park for 45 minutes. I have no major complaint. Talk a little bit of NBA playoffs, a little of NHL playoffs, maybe a little bit of boxing. Happy birthday, Sean.
Happy birthday to you as well, Mr. Kamen. Boxing? What is this boxing you speak of?
It's a sport that, unfortunately, nobody cares about. But watching Floyd Mayweather, it's certainly not exciting. But he is, you know, when we talk about athletes of the decade, in the 2000s, athletes of the millennium so far, I'm not sure. There's always been a big, you know, is it Federer, is it Tiger Woods? You know, Floyd Mayweather, the issue has always been, you know, he's never fought a great player, a great boxer at his prime. He's never taken the huge challenge. I don't know if he's ever taken a fight he thought that he could lose. After making easy work of Robert Guerrero on Saturday night, I don't know what's out there for him. Canelo Alvarez is the obvious choice, but I don't like that fight. I don't think Alvarez can take more than 3 rounds off him. I don't know where he goes from here.
Well, I did watch the fight. Believe it or not, I watched the entire fight. So I do have some inkling on what went on in the boxing world this weekend, which, surprise, surprise. The fact of the matter is that was one of the most boring fights I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
That ranked right up there with, like, Tyson and somebody where all they did was dance around, and I don't remember who it was, but basically they just danced around the entire ring.
Floyd Mayweather.
$60? For $60? That is awful.
It was actually $70.
And I think the concept that you have to understand is you said, and you and I have discussed this ad nauseum, that you have to play the best in order to be considered the best, right? Not play with the best, play the best. Play against the best. So how can you say that Floyd Mayweather is one of the best, either all time or in this millennium, when he hasn't faced the best? He's either ducked it or Pacquiao's ducked him. And I'm playing devil's advocate here because obviously I know very little about boxing. This is Seth's purview. But I think the conversation does transcend sport.
Yeah, it's a discussion I had with Nabate Isles, who I have appeared on his TV show several times. He's been on the radio show a couple times, and he is the most knowledgeable boxing cat that I know. And he is a big, big, big Floyd Mayweather fan. And his view is that Shane Mosley in his prime ducked Mayweather. He thinks Pacquiao ducked Mayweather. Nobody knows who ducked who. I know Shane Mosley had the choice to fight Floyd Mayweather or fight Oscar De La Hoya. And Oscar De La Hoya was the number one draw in the world, and Mosley fought him and beat him and became a superstar. I know De La Hoya, who is not half the fighter that Mayweather fought, moved up 20 pounds to try and fight for the middleweight championship. You know, Manny Pacquiao, although he's on a two-match losing streak, has fought Hall of Famer, all-time greats in Juan Manuel Marquez, Eric Morales, Marco Antonio Barrera, all these fighters that are real all-time greats. I don't know who Floyd Mayweather has fought, who you can consider an all-time great.
Well,
he did fight Juan Manuel Marquez.
Hold on a second. But I think that's my point.
I'm agreeing with you.
All of these guys have gone to different weight classes to challenge themselves, right? Pacquiao moved up and up and up and up and up. Mosley and De La Hoya both moved up. They moved down. The weight class is, what is it, 8 pounds? I mean, they're not all that much. You and I could probably lose 8 pounds in a day.
You could.
If we stopped eating.
I'm too much of a fat ass.
And neither one of us is really all that fat. So I think the question is, with these guys, why did Mayweather not challenge it? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he hasn't challenged himself.
Well, that, you know, that will always be the million-dollar discussion. You know, boxing is a rare sport where having the best record does not qualify you as the best ever. Rocky Marciano has, you know, retired 49-0. Rocky Marciano is a great fighter. I mean, listen to Arsenio Hall and Eddie Murphy talk about him in Coming to America. But Rocky Marciano is not considered one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. Joe Louis, Muhammad Ali, Larry Holmes, Lennox Lewis, I mean, Jack Johnson. You know, you don't really hear Marciano's name until the second tier. Gene Tunney.
Kicked Joe Louis's ass.
There you go. Yeah, he kicked Joe Louis's ass when Joe Louis was like 52 years old. You know, Mayweather has always been, you know, he is a businessman. That's what he is. That's what he claims to be. He wants to win, which we all do. I understand that. But his idea is his immortality is based upon the zero losses. And in boxing, it's just not how it works. And, you know, he is not beloved. He is incredibly respected because he's an amazing defensive fighter, but he is not a blood and guts fighter. Or we don't
he's
know
not
he is,
a dominant
he's never
fighter.
Been in any fights. We don't know.
I mean, he's not a dominant fighter. He doesn't come into the ring and people are afraid of him. I mean,
I think they are in a different way. I don't know if they're.
But, I mean, I'm talking like Tyson afraid. I'm talking like Sugar Ray Leonard afraid.
It's a different kind of afraid.
Yeah, Larry Holmes afraid. I mean, I'm going to knock you out with one punch. I don't think Mayweather brings that to the table.
He doesn't. That's not his style. But what he could do, and this may make him, you know, is to really push himself, is to go fight for the 160 title, which is held by Sergio Martinez, or God help us, and this would be the one fight where this may be too big of a jump. Because Mayweather is about a 150, give or take, fighter, 150 pounds. In my mind, the second best fighter in the world fights at 168. His name is Andre Ward. He is undefeated. I don't think he's ever lost a round. And he doesn't have too much coming up right now. You want to jump into the pantheon, that pantheon? That's it. That's the fight. But that may be a bit ridiculous. That may be a bit too much, even for Mayweather.
But here's my question, okay? So I watched the fight the other day, and I am no boxing fan. I mean, we all understand that. And if you'd like to call in 760-283-0846, we're going to spend a couple more minutes on boxing, move on to some other sports. But we actually, both of us saw the fight, so we can actually talk about this. But the fact of the matter is, to me, I don't quite understand how you win a boxing round and not, and you've discussed this ad nauseum as to sometimes you don't even understand it. How did Mayweather so abundantly win that fight when there were no knockdowns?
Sorry. Bear with me a quick second. Because he controlled the ring. You know, he did hurt Guerrero. Guerrero is a more aggressive fighter. But Guerrero was unable to land punches. Was unable to, you know, Mayweather has, you know, amazing defensive ability. The comparable for him would be a guy like a Pernell Whitaker on the defensive end who can just avoid and do these old school shoulder rolls and control the tempo of the fight and control the... control the tempo of the fight, control the ring as a whole. The issue being, the reality is he landed 60%, you know, Mayweather landed 60% of his power punches. His right arm, you know, he was leading with his right, and Guerrero could not stop it. But
it felt like he only threw five of them, so if he landed three, he landed 60%.
Well, he landed a little more. I don't have the stats in front of me, but he landed a little more than that. But
I understand that. I guess that's obviously making it a little bit less than what it was. But the fact of the matter is it felt, you know what, I can control a fight by running away.
Well,
I mean,
it's a question of whether you think he was running away or whether you think he was maneuver. It was more of a maneuvering. If you think he was running away from Guerrero, then you had the fight a lot closer. I thought the fight was around 9-3, 10-2 in favor of, but Guerrero couldn't hit it, couldn't land anything. When you're aggressive, you can't land. It doesn't matter.
And I agree with that.
So, and that's about the most boxing we've ever spoken about on this show. Go figure.
Well, because we both watched the fight. I mean, I do like boxing. I think the problem that I have with boxing, and it's the same thing at times that you have, is that you can't really look at it at its face and say, this makes sense. Because sometimes it just doesn't. I think in every other sport, and we'll move on to hockey a little bit, you have goals. All right, either goes in the damn net or it doesn't go in the damn net. There's no subjectivity there.
Yeah, it's an objectivity versus subjectivity argument.
Right. And in sports, there are very few subjective plays in sports. Maybe like you have foul calls or penalties, and the Islanders were subjected to one of those the other night, but or fair or foul call. But even those are objective. They may get them wrong, but they're objective and they can be understood. In boxing, the whole damn thing's subjective.
Well, that's the big MMA issue as well. MMA has become bigger than boxing. And the issue is that the biggest issue boxing has is boxing doesn't have the ability to put together the best fights because there are different promoters with different objectives. MMA's biggest issue is there's only really one big place to fight, but the reffing is so bad and it's so subjective, to use your words, that it's very, boxing has the same issue. And the best example, and then we'll move on, is the Pacquiao-Tim Bradley fight in January, which I didn't see, to be fair. But Dan Raphael, who is the ESPN writer, ESPN boxing writer, probably the most preeminent boxing writer out there, judged it 11-1 for Pacquiao, and somehow Bradley won the fight. There is not
But there is a way to make boxing and MMA not subjective. Knock them the hell out.
Yes, knockout, submission, whatever you want to call it.
Right. So, I mean, there is a way. Now, the question is, you continue boxing until there's a knockout. If you change the rules and did it that way, would that A, end the subjectivity, B, make it like a sudden death type thing where you knew, hey, there's no way this is going to cards. You got to knock the guy out. Now, if
they
get tired.
I was going to say, this could go 50 rounds. That's the Marquess of Queensberry rules going back to the 50-round fights in the 1880s. You can't
do
that.
But I guess the point is at that juncture, much the same way as I believe that in hockey there shouldn't be a shootout, I think you should either keep playing or end it. In the fact that if you know that there's going to be an end at some point, somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose, you're going to stop dancing around. You're going to actually go because you know that this can go 30 rounds and you're going to be exhausted by the end. So put forth your best effort in the first 10 and knock him out.
Yeah, but you can't do that. People,
why not?
Because people are not, just because you're a boxer doesn't mean you're a puncher. Mike Tyson was a puncher, not per se.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You're changing the rules. I understand you're changing the rules. I completely understand. You may be changing the sport. I understand that as well. I'm just saying that is a way that you can eliminate the subjectivity. True?
Yes, that would eliminate subjectivity.
And in the MMA, you can say, okay, you either got to knock the guy out or make him submit. You make two types of fighters. You make submit, and you don't need to be in boxing. You would probably need to either be a puncher or, like Mayweather, very good at avoiding punches and landing yours. So you could do that. In the MMA, you have two types. You have either submission holds, or you have guys that knock people out. not saying that this is a better way. I'm just saying that that is a way that you and I can look at this sport and say, yes, that makes sense every single time.
Gotcha. All right, so moving on from our mixed martial arts aspect of the show, words I never thought I would hear myself
say. By the way, that was 15 minutes on mixed martial arts and boxing.
I'm very proud of you.
Thank you. I take pride.
When you can do it on soccer, I may have to leave the show. So.
Well, we did have a 15-minute discussion last year on the raising and lowering of teams.
Yes, but that was a philosophy. That wasn't actually soccer.
By the way, you said that boxing is the only sport where the best teams do not play each other. You just brought up the other sport where it's potentially that the best teams may not play each other.
You're talking about the Champions League of soccer?
I'm talking about if a team is in the second division in soccer and they have a couple of great rookies and they have the best of their league or whatever it is, and they are probably they could be the one or two best team in the sport.
No.
And yet they're not in the same. Why not? Why can that not happen?
Because of the monetary situation, number one. The best, even at their best, the teams that are in the second best division, you know, you could be 35-0 in the second best division, and you are not one of the top two or three teams in the world.
Okay.
You're just not.
Let's take an example of that. You said it's all about money. Wasn't Manchester City in the second division?
No.
Before they came up to the first?
No.
They were never in the second division?
No.
Oh, okay.
Manchester City also was kind of a nothing team until 3 years ago when I wanted to be.
Exactly. That's my point.
But they were still
not
a second
division.
That's
exactly my point. So in 1 year, you could turn it around if they get an influx of money.
Yes. But they were also not a second division team.
Okay. Could a second division team get that type of influx of money, get bought by Sheikh Abdul, whatever his name is, and become the second best team in the world?
No.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure there's no such person as Sheikh Abdul. What's his name?
He's my benefactor. He's why I'm living in Manhattan.
Does he need any investment insurance or accounting advice?
He might. For those that would like to some of that, please contact Seth at the show. You know, the phone number is 760-283-0846 at Seth and Sean on Twitter and the Seth and Sean Facebook page. We are getting a couple of more people every week, and we do appreciate the support. And to those loyal listeners, I found out that one of my good friends, Don Conger's father, listens to the show religiously on the podcast. So, hello to Mr. Congress. Thank you very much for being a supportive fan. Really do appreciate it.
Hi, Mr. Congress. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, anyway, if you'd like a shout-out, please give us a call, and we'll be happy to give you one of those as well. So, moving on, let's talk a little bit about the NBA here. The Knicks in an 0-1 hole and the Heat in an 0-1 hole? I don't think anybody predicted both of those teams, let alone the Heat in an 0-1 hole. To the Bulls.
If Carmelo continues to shoot 30% from the floor, which he has, I believe, in the last five games, I think he may have actually, and I'm not embellishing this, he may have doubled the attempts of any other player in the NBA playoffs.
Yes, I told you this on Friday.
No, it wasn't doubled at that point. It may be now.
It's definitely doubled. The second was Boozer, and he had, I think it was 68 shots. You're right, it was 35 to 68. So he didn't double it. He came damn close. But
Stephen
Curry probably has as many shots at this point.
Yeah, because he had 24. I think he had 24 on Sunday. And Knicks and Pacers are playing right now. Knicks up six. What was I going to say? There is no tougher team than the Chicago Bulls, period. You know, what they did in the first half to Brooklyn in Game 7 without Deng, without Derrick Rose, obviously, without Kirk Heinrich. Joaquim Noah has no legs. Nate Robinson has been throwing up. Michael Jordan has been retired for 30 years. Bob Love hasn't played since the 60s. And they still go to Brooklyn, take a 20-point lead, and then hold on to be a team that was significantly more talented than them, even if they were healthy. Then what do they do?
Yeah.
48 hours later, they fly to the unbeatable Heat. They fly to Miami, play the unbeatable Heat, and beat them.
Yeah, you get no argument for me. I right now, the MVP of this playoffs is Joaquim Noah. Nobody's played better than him.
No, the only name I would even come up with, well, there's two names I would come up with that you put in the ballpark. One is actually another Bull, Nate Robinson, who has been sensational. The question is, what do you do with Nate Robinson? Assuming Derrick Rose is not injured for a second consecutive year, do you make him your backup guard? I mean,
I
the guy...
Make him, okay, so the other day I was trying to think of a comparable for Nate Robinson, and there was only one guy that I could possibly come up with because this guy didn't play great defense either. He was a spark plug off the bench. He was about 6'1", so he was about 5 inches taller than Nate Robinson.
It's not Vinny Johnson, is it?
Yes, it was. It was the microwave.
And
I don't see the problem with that comparable either. I think he plays either of the two guards. He plays tough D. Not great D, but tough D. And he comes off the bench and gives you 20 minutes, 25 minutes a game at both spots. Why is that a bad comp?
I think Nate Robinson is much more athletic than Vinny Johnson was.
Well, of course. You're asking about the role that he plays, not necessarily, and right on TNT right now is Reggie Miller scoring 9 points and killing every Knicks fan. Anyway,
sometimes.
Ewing missing the shot. Oh, anyway, bad times. So, but I mean, as far as the role that he's going to play next year, if he does come back and if Derrick Rose is out, I see that as the role. Don't you?
Yeah, but I kind of get the feeling Robinson doesn't want that role. I think Robinson.
Well, of course, doesn't want that role. He's 5'8". He's been dealing with this his whole life as to people that underestimate him. Of course he doesn't want that role. But sometimes it's not what you want, but what you get.
Yeah.
Philosophy by Sean Palmer.
Quite deep. Deep thought. The other guy who I thought has been the best player in the playoffs, Stephon Curry, who we were talking last week about a potential monumental choke job against Denver. They were up 16 on San Antonio last night with 4 minutes to go and lost in double overtime. Have you seen the video of the woman shrieking?
No.
Oh, you've got to find it. I was watching this last night. This woman must have been right next to the TNT announcers. And when Danny Green hit a three-pointer to put them ahead, it sounded like fingernails on a chalkboard. There were tweets about it. It was on awfulannouncing.com. I thought it was just me. And then actually one of our occasional listeners, Barry from New York, posted something on Facebook. And she posted the video of it. And it was agonizing. I thought it was just my TV was bad.
No, you just bought a new TV. Your TV should be good.
Well, it should be, but...
But, okay, so you were talking about choke jobs. So last night was, and let's call it spade to spade, the Spurs have not lost to the Warriors at home in almost 25 years. So, they were ready to lose that game, and... How on earth do you leave Manu Ginobili wide open?
I don't know.
That's the question I have, because Manu, to me, is probably the most valuable player on that team when he's healthy. He's the best player on that team when he's healthy for everything. he's definitely the most complete player on that team. And I just don't that just boggled my mind. Jarrett Jack having a great series, though. And we were getting back to, we were talking about Curry versus Noah. I agree with you. Curry has been everything for Golden State, but I think Golden State actually has more talent on that team right now. And Noah has done, rebounding, passing, pick and rolls. He has definitely opened my eyes to the type of player he is. I thought he was just an energy player. And he became, in this playoff series, the last playoff series and game one against the Heat, he became an MVP candidate to me.
Well, here's the question. Considering the indifference that Dwight Howard seems to play with, the lack of defense of Brook Lopez, is Joaquin Noah the best center in the NBA?
No, I don't even think Joaquin Noah is the best center that came out of Florida in the NBA.
You put Al Horford over him.
You know I have a man crush on Al Horford. I mean, I think he is probably the most underrated player in the NBA.
I think so, too, but I also consider, is he a forward? Is he a center?
Well, he's been forced to play center because Josh Smith has been playing power forward. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he's a center right now. If Dwight Howard goes to Atlanta, well, then we have our power forward. But I love Horford. I mean, aren't Horford and Noah basically the same size? I mean, if one's a power forward, isn't the other?
Yeah, give or take the energy, which is why I would probably rather have Noah than Horford.
True.
Plus, I can get more marketing dollars for Noah. But
that's true. I think Horford is a more polished player. I think
probably.
Noah is definitely a – what's that?
I said probably.
Yeah. But I think overall, I think Horford's a better player, but I think that they are close. I'd probably take right now. I mean, even with Howard and what he's done the past couple of years – crunch time, I want either one of those guys over Dwight Howard because they can shoot free throws. And Howard just can't. So, I mean, if I'm starting a team, I might pick either one of them over Dwight Howard, right? Especially with the contracts that they have. But I think that's a whole other ballgame.
That's a whole other discussion.
Yeah, a whole other discussion. I won't bring that into play right now.
Well, speaking of players you'd start a team around, do you want to explain how LeBron James did not win the MVP unanimously? Because I don't get it. He was one vote short.
Well, as I don't know who the voter was, I can't really tell you that. By the way, the Knicks are up 27-20 with 52 seconds left in the first quarter, for those that are concerned.
A Boston rider.
It was a Boston rider?
Voted for Carmelo Anthony.
That honestly doesn't surprise me considering what Carmelo did against Boston this year. But at the same time, you know what? Somebody always wants to get a little publicity. And I think most people knew that LeBron was going to be either unanimous or close to it. And he probably voted to say, hey, look at me. I have a little ego, and I'm the guy that didn't do it.
His argument was that without LeBron, Miami is still a 5 seed. Without Carmelo.
Well, that's your argument.
Yes and no. Right. My argument is it's very difficult to put LeBron at the top of the all-time greats, although my argument is losing luster as far as we go, and I know that. Because he's playing, you know, because he purposely joined the best, one of the He purposely joined something which was not the best. He almost did what as we talked about, Floyd Mayweather doesn't fight the best competition. LeBron James, went to the best competition.
You're making my argument for me. But I think in both cases you're making the argument because you're saying that LeBron James joined his competition, right?
Mm-hmm.
The best competition that he had. Well, the best competition that he had was the fifth and probably ninth best players in the NBA. So you take LeBron James off that, and I think that guy has a valid point. They probably would be a 5 seed.
Yeah. I guess my
you take Carmelo off the New York Knicks, and they're not a two seed. By they may not be in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, that was his argument. You know, the more I see Carmelo, the less I like him as a player. I know that kind of goes against the philosophy. He's a scorer. You know, he's a great scorer. He's not a great player.
I agree with that. He's Bernard King.
Yeah. That's the fourth. That's the third time by three very knowledgeable people. And I don't think he has the same kind of game as Bernard King, but that's,
no,
you know,
they have two different types of game. I mean, he's an Alex English. He's a George Gervin. You can name the best scorers in NBA history, and I think he's right there as far as a scorer. I mean,
yeah.
Putting the ball in the basket, he's right there. Do I think that his defense has definitely improved? Absolutely. I mean, I really do. I think his defense has absolutely improved. But do I think is he an MVP candidate? No. I mean, he hasn't gotten to that defensive level. And remember, LeBron really wasn't an MVP candidate till he brought that defense and that rebounding to that next level. And when he did, he became an MVP candidate. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think as a scorer, he's probably in the top, probably 2 to 3 in the NBA right now. Him and on a healthy day, I think he's a better scorer than LeBron. Pure and simple scorer. I think there are two guys right now that counter his scoring. One is still in the playoffs, and that's Curry. Different types of game. And one is Kobe. And the Islanders just scored a goal. Anyway, sorry. 1-0 Islanders.
You forgot the best scorer of all of them. Kevin Durant?
I forgot Durant? yeah, okay. He's in the top four. There you go.
I mean,
I'll tell you what, though. Durant and Melo's game are very similar.
But here's the difference. Westbrook goes out. Durant averages 10 rebounds and 5 assists a game.
Agreed.
Carmelo doesn't adjust his game accordingly.
Oh, I don't think that's true. I just don't think he's gotten this. No, okay, well, let's put this in the same context as, does Melo have a player like Westbrook at all?
But Westbrook's not in there at this point.
No. I'm saying you have to learn to play with the player before you learn to play without him, don't you?
Yes.
Okay, so does he have a player like Westbrook? Has he ever had a player like Westbrook?
No.
No. He's got the same Patrick Ewing syndrome. He's never been a number two. Is J.R. Smith a number two to that level? No. J.R. Smith is a very nice player. He's probably the best, as I said last week on the show, probably the best player, all-around player that the Knicks have. Okay. I mean, but he's a good player. He's a Rolando Blackman. He's a he's not as good as Manu. So,
not Manu in his prime, no.
No, he's not as good as Manu. So, I mean, you have to learn how to play with somebody like that in order to realize how much he gives you so you can adjust your thinking when he's not there. You're right. Durant's a better player. I think the Islanders just gave up a goal, too.
That didn't take long. Well, we'll get to hockey in a little while. But going forward with the rest of the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, it's 1-1. It's 1-1. Wow, that was quick. Anyway.
With Brooklyn fired P.J. Carlesimo out as coach, right move, wrong move?
It was going to happen.
I mean,
even Carlesimo said, he goes, the only way I was going to be rehired was going to the finals. Look, I see Prokhorov as another George Steinbrenner. I really do. A guy that's just going to be in the middle of everything. And as long as he keeps Billy King there, Billy King, I think, is the problem. I mean, Billy King has never had a great track record as a GM. I mean, he put together a championship caliber team in Philadelphia that was incredibly weak, right? In the East, I mean, he had Allen Iverson and Mutombo, and that was all they had. So, I mean, I think that was more of a Larry Brown than a Billy King. And he was in Atlanta, where they did nothing except sign Joe Johnson to a 9-year contract. So, I don't think Billy King's anything special, but they just signed him to a new three-year deal, so we'll see.
Well,
I mean, I don't think Phil Jackson's coming.
I don't see why Phil Jackson would come. Phil Jackson has stated publicly he doesn't want to coach. He wants kind of the Pat Riley where he can run the franchise. I'm not quite sure, as you said, how you sign, if that's what you want to bring in, how you sign your GM to a 3-year extension.
Exactly.
People gave him accolades for the deals that he made. I don't quite see what he did that was particularly impressive. Trading for Joe Johnson, traded half the team for Joe Johnson in his $20 million contract, number one. Brooke Lopez, he signed because he couldn't get Howard. And Lopez, was fantastic this year. And Darren Williams, stayed because he wanted to be a name in Brooklyn.
And he wanted the money.
Yeah. He wanted
all four of those guys, and I'll include Gerald Wallace in there too, went for the most money.
Yeah.
And they got it. That's not Billy King. That's Prokhorov opening his wallet. That's taking $323 million in salaries and saying, here, coach, go do it. And I think PJ got a bum rap. I mean, PJ didn't start the year as the coach. These weren't his sets that they were playing until very late in the game. And I believe he went like 36-15 in the last 41 games.
He was 35-19. And
35-19, sorry.
I think the obvious pick choice for me, if they're going to go first-time coaches, which is what my assumption is they're going to do, is Brian Shaw, the assistant at Indiana. I don't think they're going to go Jerry Sloan. I don't think they're going to go Van Gundy's. I don't think Phil Jackson is interested. So Shaw is a logical pick for me. The other team that where we may have a coaching vacancy pretty soon is out on the other coast in L.A., with the Clippers, a disappointing 6-game loss to Memphis. Supposedly there are some issues between Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. Vinny Del Negro has been hammered in the press for years. Do you think he gets to keep his job?
Oh, Chicken Del Negro is gone. There's no doubt Chicken Del Negro is gone. I don't think Chris Paul enjoys working, playing for him. I don't think Chris Paul would ever say that, but I think this is going to be all about what can I do to keep Chris Paul as part of my team. And if that means I'm going to give him the choice of the coach, I'm going to do exactly that. Now, who that coach is, that's an interesting concept because I have no idea who's on their radar. And remember, their owner is the also monetarily challenged yet has a ton of money, Donald Sterling. So, sorry, I thought that the Penguins scored again. So he's not shelling out $20 million for Phil Jackson, in my mind. So the question is, where do they go from here? And I have no idea. But Chris Paul is going to make that pick, whoever it is. I think he does stay though. I don't think the other options for him, and we'll talk about this a little bit after the NBA playoffs, as far as monetarily, the only other options for him are Dallas and Atlanta. So, and Boston, but Boston's a complete rebuild. So the question is, does he want to go to Atlanta and try and take a little bit less on the max and bring Dwight Howard with him, which would be pretty amazing to have Horford, Howard, and Paul. Talk about a threesome. That's not bad. Or go to Dallas and team up with Dirk Nowitzki with a promise from Mark Cuban that he's going to do everything he can.
Yeah. It's going to be, as always, the NBA. A lot of times, the NBA is more interesting in the off season than it is during the year. So,
generally
speaking,
that is the case.
Would you say?
I say, generally speaking, that is the case.
So, what are your predictions?
Especially for me, being the cap guy.
Yeah, you are the capologist. So, we have Knicks Pacers. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, the Knicks are playing like the
now,
Knicks in the playoffs have played. If they play the way that they play in the regular season, which is distributing the ball, I think they'll win the series. But if they play like they did the first game against Indiana, they're going down in six. They're playing much better basketball.
Yeah, they're up a dozen right now. I actually think Indiana will beat them in six.
Six. Okay, so you think that in Seiko Fieldhouse or whatever they call it now.
Whatever the name is. I think it's just two very similar, very good teams that are very physical. I think it's a good series. As much as I would love to say I think Chicago is going to beat Miami, nobody, I think, really thinks that. I will give Chicago the benefit of the doubt and give them one more win and take Miami in six.
Okay, I'm going to take Miami in five. I think that's it. they got their win. Miami was a little embarrassed. Dwayne Wade was certainly embarrassed, and that's over. Finish it up in five in Miami.
Going out west. Memphis had a great chance to take a 1-0 lead. Didn't happen. Can Oklahoma go to the conference finals?
No.
Without Westbrook?
No, I don't think so. By the way, I'd like to point out that I got all four series in the first round correct.
Congratulations.
Actually, I got all four series? All eight series. Eight series. All eight. I'm 8-0 so far. You are 7-1.
I am.
Wait, did you pick Memphis or did you pick the Clippers?
Actually, I took Memphis. I think you took the Clippers.
Yeah? Oh, then we're both 7-1. Okay.
We are.
I think Memphis wins the series. I think if they don't win the series, it's a complete and total tribute to Kevin Durant. But I think they do win the series. I think they win in seven in Oklahoma City.
I think if Memphis doesn't win this series, Memphis will never win with this team. You really can't ask for a much better matchup than a team with their second best player out. And we don't even know who their third best player is.
That'll be Kevin Martin.
Yeah, which doesn't exactly instill a great deal of confidence in me for a team that's supposed to be on a championship run. I like Memphis in six. My feeling is the Warriors blew their best opportunity last night, up 16 on the road. I like the Spurs in five.
I will take the Spurs in five as well. I think that they did blow a great shot. I'd like to see them win the game in San Antonio, just so that streak would end and I no longer have to hear about it. But who knows? But yeah, in five. So hopefully next week we'll have picks for the next round.
Well,
moving on to God.
I was going to say, before we go there, your Islanders putting up quite a fight.
Yeah, well, they're spunky. And they wanted to give me a very happy birthday, which they did. They're 1-1 now. The 1-8 matchup, I predicted that the Islanders would lose in five. They'd get a game. They got their game in game one, which I didn't think was going to happen. I think they will win tonight, which will give them two games. So I think they probably lose in six.
That sounds about right to me. Losing the game 3 in overtime certainly hurts. And, you know, they put up a very solid effort.
That's kind of what I'm saying in relation to a sport that ends. There's no subjectivity about that. It's over. Like, I'm very happy that the shootout rules do not go into the finals, because I think that would be the worst. I still think it's the worst way to lose a game, is that you play for 40, 60 minutes, and then you lose because three guys couldn't put the puck in the net against the goalie with no defense.
I agree.
Changes. Same thing with soccer PKs. I think it totally it changes the game.
It's mind-boggling to me that you can have a World Cup end on a shootout, which we know we've seen both in the women's in 99 and the men's in 2008. Awful.
Good.
So, I mean, you're more of a hockey expert than me. What other surprises have you seen?
Well, I'm actually surprised that Boston has come back and is now leading the series 2-1. I really thought that the Maple Leafs were going to put up a lot more of a fight than they did. They were kind of blown out of the building in the second game. I'm very surprised that the Rangers are down 2-0.
2-1.
Sorry, 2-1. 2-1, they won last night. However, I don't see the Rangers winning that series. Like, the Capitals will win that series. I think they'll win it in 7. And as I read a great article on Grantland, I think it was Grantland, about the Islanders, I think the Islanders, much like Mets fans, root just as much against the Rangers as they do for their own team. So if you're interested in reading a good article about hockey, check out that on Grantland. Good article.
I think that makes sense.
The Knicks are only up 7 right now.
Well, you figure you knew Indiana would make a run. Kind of going through the series quickly. Ottawa surprisingly up 2-1 on Montreal. We talked about Pittsburgh and the Islanders. Surprised that Luongo hasn't played. I know that Corey Schneider is the starting goalie in Vancouver. But San Jose up 3-0. I'm just surprised. I guess they just couldn't get rid of Luongo, and I just figured they would give him a – I mean, Schneider hasn't been great. I thought they'd give him a little bit of a chance.
Yeah. Well, I think if nothing else, I think this is the end of Roberto Luongo in Vancouver. I think this will fully establish that will be the concept behind the off season, and how they trade Roberto Luongo will be the big story, whether he goes to Toronto or elsewhere. So I agree with you. You thought that you might get Roberto Luongo, but at this point, you're going to play the best that you got, regardless of whether he's on the bench or he's not playing very well. You got to ride that goalie. So that's what they're doing right now.
Chicago, as I said, up 2-1. Detroit, Anaheim 2-2. San Jose cruising over Vancouver. St. Louis and the Kings, which is really a conference final-esque kind of matchup, is 2-2. Yeah, I had taken Chicago to win it in the beginning of the year, Chicago-Pittsburgh, which honestly looks pretty good at this point, but that is a great 1-4 or 1-5 matchup, whoever wins that San Jose.
Well, I gotta tell you, you went out on a limb there.
I don't think the Blackhawks were that shocking were that much of a favorite coming into this season.
Well, okay, I'll agree with that. I'll agree with that. You have my kudos on picking the two number one seeds. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. So
you're more than welcome.
We got about 10 minutes to go. Should we touch on baseball? Is there anything you want to hit on?
We probably should a little bit. I mean, there are some major surprises going on in Major League Baseball right now. One of them is a team that Mr. Kamens and I both had dead to rights in first place, and that would be the Boston Red Sox. Another team that we both had pretty high up, you had them a little bit higher than me, in last place and playing awful ball is the LA Dodgers. And then a team that we both had pretty high up, I believe you had them in first and I am in second, or some combination of that. Toronto Blue Jays have had all sorts of injuries, and they're not really fulfilling what we thought their prophecy would be as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole lot going on.
I just like looking and seeing, you know, this is why you know it's early in the season. The Kansas City Royals are 17-11. Are 17-11. The Kansas City Royals haven't been 17-11, I think, since Brett Saberhagen was a starting pitcher for them.
Which was 1987.
Yeah.
The difference, and something to keep in mind when you look at these early season games, not only are they early season, but at the same point, these teams, some of them have had easier records and easier games played against common opponents than others. And the Royals have a pretty easy schedule earlier in the year. So much like the Pirates last year, you might see the Royals come back down to earth, especially since Eric Hosmer, unless he starts hitting, that team's going to be in a lot of problems.
So, I mean, the other surprise, Colorado half game out. But the thing about Colorado, pitching be damned, you know what pitching in Colorado is like. When was the last time that Carlos Gonzalez and Troy Tulowitzki were actually healthy?
Well, that's the point. I mean, now that they're finally healthy, you're going to get to see what they'll do. I mean, they're going to hit. That team is definitely going to hit. I don't think it has anything to do with their hitting. It's all about their fielding, that team. Their pitching, that team, and whether they can put the ball over the plate. Just for those that are looking for an update, the Knicks are up 7 with 5 minutes to go, and that may be 5 now. No, still 7. So a little bit more to there. The Mets, surprisingly, are doing fairly well. I mean, I wouldn't say that they're having a great year, but they're hanging on. The Yankees, wow, where'd they come from? These New York Yankees, second place.
Kind Which of in years past,
I got
in years.
Well, I had them in last place.
And I had them in third.
So they're definitely breaking my barrier. The question is whether they will continue even as they keep getting guys back, and whether the contributions from like guys like Vernon Wells, who you haven't seen in the last like 5 years because he's $23 million being paid like a superstar and just isn't a superstar, whether that's going to come to pass or not. And this, my friend, Mr. Kamens, is exactly why you do not like Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo just are you watching the game?
Yeah.
Carmelo with the 3-on-1 and took it himself?
Yeah, I looked away from it. I'm watching from my computer screen in my office. But
okay. Somebody's working late. Wow.
Well, as most of you know, I run a couple businesses and I'm a little busy, and so it's easier for me to stay here and run the show from here at 7 o'clock and run back to the Upper West Side. So
the surprises, I would say, are the Dodgers are 13-18. I had San Francisco first in first place, and they're 19-13. But we both had Colorado in last, and they're 18-13 and a half a game out. So they're at the quarter pole. Are they 28 games? No, not at the quarter pole.
No, they're not even a fifth in yet. So we got time on baseball, and you know, during baseball season, my guess is I will probably take an occasional hiatus because it's baseball, and the idea of July baseball is just not that exciting. Maybe we'll bring in Devante Isles for him and Sean to argue, or Fred Steinman. There's a bunch of people we can bring in.
Yeah, we will be having a hiatus though around Memorial Day, where we will try and find a guest. A guest host, as Mr. Cannons and I will both be traveling to Cancun, and very much a nice reward for the both of us after a hard year of work.
Yeah, this is my post busy season, pre whatever you want to call it,
pre summer break.
Yeah, I'll be taking a few trips down to the nation's capital, I'm sure, as well. But 5 days in Cancun is sounding pretty good right now.
Absolutely, especially since it's all booked.
It is now officially all booked. But
yep.
That's 2 weeks or 3 weeks away on the radio show. We'll see what happens in that regard.
Absolutely.
So we got about four. I mean, the other thing I want to talk about is Roy Halladay done?
Yeah, I mean, he's got to reinvent himself, and I'm not sure that's possible. He's got a this year is the last year of his contract. It's $24 million. I mean, it would be a shame if him and Chris Carpenter, who both are tremendous competitors and ex-teammates, both end their career in the same year. Neither one of them, in my opinion, has done enough in the Hall of Fame. Maybe Halladay, but Carpenter definitely not. And that'll be an interesting case if Halladay is done based on his career stats. And I know that some people will say, well, he was the dominating player. And here we are again saying, do you have the stats to do the Hall of Fame? I guess the question is, again, what era are you in, and are numbers that important?
Well, the issue being, Roy, you know, my argument is always, are you really one of the best? You know, and Roy Halladay was one of the best. I'd have to go, we don't have enough time right now, we've only got about 3 minutes. To go through the stats of Halladay. Carpenter was more of a great clutch pitcher, but injuries took up so much of his career that I think it would be difficult to put him in the Hall. Halladay, you know, may not have had the longest career, but he had a very solid one for a very long time, was one of the three or four best pitchers in baseball, you can say, for a good 4 or 5 year, 6 year span. So I think his argument is more legitimate than Carpenter's is.
I definitely agree with that. I mean, Halladay's numbers are 201 and 104 with a 3.37 ERA and eight-time All-Star. So, I mean, he's obviously been the best for a period of time. The question is that period of time just long enough?
Yeah. That's an argument for a different day. So we got.
Yes, that'll be an argument I'll have with Fred Steinem when you're on vacation somewhere.
Sounds good. So, well, Hall of Fame arguments I enjoy. It's just the day-to-day. So, we got 2 minutes left. Go. What do you want to end with?
I don't really have all that much, except if you're not a hockey fan and you haven't watched a hockey game this year, or even if you're one of those casual hockey fans like I know my co-host is, I know he enjoys playoff hockey. This playoff hockey to me is totally different than any other type of hockey. If you're going to try and find a sport at this juncture in the year where there is regular season baseball, the NBA playoffs, or playoff hockey, turn on some playoff hockey and watch some good hockey being played.
Oh, it's funny when people ask, "What's your you know, when you're talking about May, what's your favorite thing to watch in May? Is it the NHL playoffs, which I enjoy immensely. Is it the NBA playoffs? Is it the beginning of baseball season? Is it talking the NFL draft? Well, maybe talking the NFL draft. I love watching the end of the EPL season. I do. Because you have teams where we're talking $50, $60 million is contingent on whether you stay in the top league or go drop down to the bottom. The way it works is you have a relegation of three. You know, the bottom three teams get relegated from a given division. The top three either move up or are deemed champions if they're in the top league. To me, there is nothing more exciting, nothing scarier to watch than teams where your entire existence may be contingent on one game. Or your TV contract or your best player staying with your team are contingent on one game. Because if you're a top player and you're on a team that's relegated, most likely, even if you're in a signed contract, you will be moving to another team. That's just the way the world works. So in a couple, there's like six or seven. Two of the teams are already relegated. There's a team, Wigan, which has been in there forever fighting relegation, will be in a relegation fight. Aston Villa, Sunderland, a bunch of them. It's a lot of fun. It's really worth watching. Or worth watching, like watching a highlight show. They do an hour highlight show, which I compare to NFL primetime at its prime on Fox Sports, which I think is great. So that's it for this week. For Sean Palmer, this is the somewhat older, Okay, only older in body and in spirit. But Seth Kavins, we'll talk to you guys next week. Seth and Sean, backsportspage.com. Good night, everybody.